Welcome back to the Red Sox Precap Podcast, a podcast from the Over the Monster Podcast Network, where we recap the series that just ended, preview the series that's about to start. I'm your host, Keaton DeRocher, joined, as always, by Bailey Lunch-Snyder. Bailey, welcome back. It's been a minute since we've been able to do this together.
It has. I'm glad that we could figure it all out. You know, schedules be crazy.
Yeah, they certainly are. Glad to get this back on track and a good one to get going with. Let's dive right on in, reviewing the Cardinals with Game 1.
So, yeah, in Game 1, we had Adam Wainwright versus Waka, and the Red Sox got a 6-5 win. But what I absolutely loved about this before jumping in and talking about Waka was that, like, Wainwright was pretty much, like, Waka's, like, mentor when they were both on the Cardinals together. So it's really cool just to see them be able to face off and for, you know, Waka to really outduel him a little bit. So Waka, it wasn't his greatest outing, but I mean, what more could we really ask? He went 5 1/3 innings. He had 1 earned run, 6 hits, 1 walk, struck out 6. So, I mean, really couldn't ask for much more than what Waka's been doing all this season. And then, of course, like the gem of the season in that bullpen, I think, has been Schreiber. You know, he came in, he went 1 1/3, nails once again. His ERA was lowered to 0.92 on the season. And then Strom, who I think, you know, outside of, you know, a little bit of an injury hiccup, I think he's been nothing but solid for the Sox all season. He came in again, 1 1/3 from him as well, gave up nothing. But you know, the pen did tend to have a little bit of an implosion, because that's been some of the theme, I feel like. Davis came in, he gave up 3 earned runs. The Red Sox were not able to hold a 5-run lead going into the ninth. They had to go to Tanner Houck, but he gave up an earned run himself. But thankfully, they were able to secure a 6-5 win, but they did go in with, you know, a 6-1 lead. And the offense, they kind of spaced out their hits a little bit. They played more timely baseball. You know, the first inning, they were able to score after Jaron Duran showed off the wheels. He got, you know, a triple, but then it was a double play ball that brought him in from JD. Then later, you know, JD had a single, Bogarts had a double, and then Story with another timely single was able to score 2 runs in the fourth for the Sox. But then Franchi, who's been really great for the Sox all season, he came in the seventh, got a double, and was brought home by JBJ single. I think JBJ has been looking pretty solid. They've been mostly singles, but they've been pretty timely for the Sox. And then Dalbec came up clutch with a double of his own, bringing in JBJ. So the Red Sox were able to get some timely hits and get that 6-5 win. But I think a big question that I have for you is, do you see Houck is now being this de facto closer? And if he is the de facto closer, you know, what took Cora so long to, you know, give him this role? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think he definitely is. Right before the series started, Chris Cotillo, mm-hmm. Mass Live, had Dave Bush on his podcast and asked, is Tanner Houck the closer? And his response was, it's certainly trending that way.
Oh, great.
And I think after this series, there's like no doubt.
Yeah.
Obviously, we saw it in Game 1 where he was brought in mm-hmm. to stop the bleeding, shut the door, get the save. Then we saw it again in Game 3, which we'll get to. So I think without a doubt, he's the guy in the highest of leverage situations. I think what took them so long is they had no idea what to do with him for the longest time, right? I mean, he started the season as a starter.
Yeah.
And Whitlock was the guy that was in those high leverage roles. Now they flipped after the Toronto series where Houck couldn't go.
Yeah.
And then they knew he was going to be in the pen, but then they didn't really know what his role was going to be. They had him like piggybacking Whitlock and throwing like 2-3 innings at a time. Then they were like, well, that's stupid. Maybe we shouldn't be doing that. Shrunk his role into shorter stints and then finally pushed him into high leverage situations and then finally pushed him into the closer situations. And now he's up to 4 saves already. I think they just, for the longest time, didn't know what the hell to do with him. And now they finally have realized, oh, hey, we got a dude who's got nasty stuff. Maybe he should be our closer.
Yes.
That's fun. Yes.
And not only that, he's somebody that could potentially pitch more than one inning if you need him to. So you have a closer with that versatility too that can just be super valuable for the Red Sox. I've just been, since the beginning, because I've always been a Houck in the pen Whitlock in the starting role. I thought that wasn't going to happen until 2023, but because of, you know, Houck not being vaccinated, things sort of got a little expedited on that. But so I've always in my mind been like, this guy could close. So I'm glad that the Red Sox are finally seeing that too, because I think he could be an extremely valuable closer. But things are going to have to change again if his vaccination status is still not vaxxed. So maybe somebody like Strom will have to close when you get up to, you know, north of the border, or maybe he did get himself vaccinated. I mean, highly doubtful that, you know, you'll do anything for the team except that, but hey, you know, yeah. It would help because the Red Sox are going to have to, it could get tricky if there are close games, unless, you know, there's been some movement with the pen from, you know, the front office standpoint by the time we play Toronto next in Toronto. I'm not exactly sure when we go, you know, to the six again, but it's going to get a little tricky if he is definitely your go-to closer, but you just don't have him in Toronto.
Yeah. It's going to be really annoying because these are going to be really critical games.
Yep. Unbelievably so.
Yeah. And if we get into a situation, so this is what had been the biggest difference this series between, I mean, we talked about this a lot through the first month. The biggest issue was, like, without the offense giving the bullpen some insurance, winning these games wouldn't have been possible. Mm-hmm. Also, coupled with the fact that we didn't have somebody to stop the bleeding when there was bleeding. Yeah. That was the whole point. Like we talked about, without Whitlock not being the closer, probably cost him like 8 games throughout the first month.
Yeah.
But it was also the offense not kind of scoring runs. Absolutely. Well, the offense is back to scoring runs, giving them a bit of a cushion, giving them a chance to make a couple mistakes. But then again, not having someone to stop the bleeding, this is a pretty good Cardinals offense. They could have scored a whole bunch more if Houck didn't come in and slam the door. Toronto's offense is a lot better than this.
Yeah, it's brutal.
And you are fighting with Toronto within the division for a playoff spot. So without having a guy who can come in and close the door, you're not going to win those games. Mm-hmm. It's going to be just like the first month of the season. So it's going to be real annoying not having him available. So hopefully, you know, he might see the gravity of that situation, or I guess absolute worst case scenario, we see ourselves in a playoff series with Toronto. We'll get that taken care of, but yeah, it's gonna be real frustrating not having your best lineup available in games that you need to win.
Yeah, absolutely. I was impressed, given that, you know, we had heard like whispers of so many of the Red Sox not being vaccinated in 2021. I was, outside of like, I think Houck and Crawford, for the most part, like our A+ lineup was up there. You know, some of the people that were on the fence realized like, no, we need to get vaccinated in order for the betterment of our team. So I was at least happy that to see a good portion of our lineup up there. But yeah, if you're going to go into Toronto without your closer, that is such a disadvantage.
Yeah, particularly with this bullpen, because we've seen it without a closer, and it's really bad. It's really, really bad.
Yes, absolutely. And it's like, we just saw how it's really interesting to me, though, is because figuring out the closer role will be super beneficial for them, and I think they figured that out. But then if we just bring in one other reliever that's really good, I think that'll help too, whether or not it's a closer or if it's somebody that's just really solid in the eighth inning to help them. Because there are pieces in that pen that I think are good and are of value, but it's just the people that you bring in to mop up a game, those people are so bad that a 6-1 lead becomes a 6-5 before you know it. That's a huge problem, is that the mop-up guys aren't competent enough to hold 5-run leads, and that's just baffling.
Yep. Not great. Not great. But hey, still got the win. And that's a step up from, you know, a month and a half ago. So step Absolutely. In the right direction. That's progress.
Absolutely. And then we're seeing great things. Like, but another quick question before we jump into like the second game was, is Waka really for real? I feel like at this point it has to be a yes, because he's just been stepping up in every situation, especially now that we have both Whitlock and Eovaldi going down on the IL. You really need somebody like Waka to be stepping up.
Yeah. I mean, he's the ace right now. Well, I guess there's also Pivetta. But but those two guys are holding down this starting rotation right now, which Absolutely. Is huge, because I wasn't expecting anything from really either of these guys.
Yeah.
But Waka in particular, it had been a few years since we had seen really anything productive out of him.
Yes.
Since like 2018. Mm-hmm. And 2020 and 2021 were really, really bad. So I really wasn't expecting anything at all. And now we've gotten up to nearly 60 innings of this. Yeah, I mean, at some point, he is what he is, and I think this is it. I was surprised by how quickly I bought into this, too.
Yeah, same.
It didn't take me long to, like, I'm normally resistant to guys that are, like, this good coming off of seasons that are pretty bad. But after, like, four starts, I had, like, fully bought in and was like, holy crap, they got something here. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And that's not usually kind of how things go for me. And so I bought in super early to this, and there's nothing that's happened since to change my mind. It's really kind of only strengthened it, which is pretty wild. So, yeah, this is – every time he goes out there, I fully expect Red Sox to get the win.
Yeah, same.
All right, game two. Well, this will be quick because there's not a whole lot to talk about here.
true.
Dakota Hudson, Cutter Crawford. Crawford went four innings, six hits, four earned runs, no walks, three strikeouts. When it rains, it pours. Robles followed, and since returning from the IL, he has looked really the opposite of sharp. He managed to give up another four earned runs and two-thirds of an inning pitched. Sarumura followed and gave up an earned run of his own, and then Davis capped it off with a lackluster night, giving up another earned run. The offense didn't really do much against the Cardinals pitching staff with a middling game, managing just two runs. Really, the big opportunity miss was Jaron Duran up with the bases loaded in a two-run game and grounded out, which was tough. That was pretty much it. Nothing really timely. A couple singles from Dalbec and Story. Question for you on Jaron Duran, though. We talked when we did the three-way Red Seat podcast. We talked about Duran a bit because he had just been sent down, and then we had an immediate need for him to come back, but he couldn't because he had just been sent down. So the 10 days was up. He's right back up. Do you think he should remain up here in the majors? He has since just continued to put the bat on the ball, racking up extra base hits, right now hitting 319, I believe. Yeah, 319. Looking pretty sharp at the major league level. What are your thoughts on Duran staying here when guys start to return from their COVID ILs and injury ILs?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely if you can get a cost-effective player who is producing at the major league level, I think it's only beneficial to give him an opportunity. And potentially, you know, when you get Kike back, you could potentially have an outfield. But the only tricky part about all of this is the huge liability in this man's game is playing the outfield. And at that point, if you're playing him consistently on a consistent basis, you're not taking Kike out of center. You're not taking Verdugo out of left. So you're putting him in the most difficult right field in Major League Baseball, which proves to be a massive issue when you are subpar defensively. So that's really the only thing. And JBJ has been holding his own for, you know, whatever it is. And JBJ can always hold his own when, you know, you have a solid 1-8. You know, and he's just hitting ninth down there and then maybe coming up with some clutch hits from time to time. But at the same time, it's like, because of that, are you taking away from Duran? And are you saying, we're going to run away, we're just going to let Duran have it, but then you're going to have this huge liability in right field. So it is very difficult, in my opinion, at least to say yes or no, just because of how terrible he is defensively.
Do you think Verdugo could play a good enough right that Duran could play left and you would be strong enough defensively?
I think so, because I think pretty much 2021, the season that we had in 2020, like the entire time, Verdugo was out there pretty much in right the whole time. And I think he can hold his own in the corners. I think he's just more of a liability in center. So if that's what you're thinking, like have him go over and play right, then yeah, I think it might make it easier to play left field for Duran. But I mean, offensively, that could be your best bet, but you're taking a little bit of a, you know, a back step defensively.
Yeah. All right, well, that wraps up game two. Red Sox get the loss 11-2 heading into game three, tied 1-1.
Yeah, so we went into the third game. We had Pivetta versus Pallante, and I believe this was Pallante's third career major league start. So congrats to him on that one. He did break in with the Cardinals in the pen, but now he's starting to get starting roles. Pivetta, once again, 7 innings pitched, 4 hits, 1 run. The 1 run was earned. 4 walks, 10 Ks. So he really wasn't the sharpest he's ever been. Like, those 4 walks, you know, that not the best, but thankfully they didn't really come back to hurt him because he did scatter in 10 Ks and he did really battle through this. Like, we're sitting here, we're talking about how this wasn't his best outing. He still pitched 7 innings of 1-run baseball. So, I mean, you really can't ask for, even at his best, it's still better than pretty much everybody that we have being thrown out there now because, you know, Evaldi's and Whitlock are on the IL right now. And then, of course, we had Schreiber come in once again, continuing his dominance in the eighth. He actually just came out and struck out the side, looked absolutely incredible doing it. ERA lowered to 0.87. But then, of course, some of the guys in the pen that aren't the, you know, the guys that really step up and pitch well. We had Danish come in. It got a little dicey. He allowed 3 earned runs, including an absolute monster blast to Juan Yepez in the ninth. So made it a little scary there because we went in with a 6-1 lead into the ninth. We had to use Tanner Houck once again to help secure a 5-run lead that they could not do. So we were able to get a 6-4 win, thankfully. The offense did come to play, though. Trevor Story got the party started with a solo Oppo home run in the second. JBJ helped put the Sox on top in the fifth, driving in Verdugo with a nice single. Ref Schneider, since being called back up, has been really a nice little spark. A line drive single in the seventh helped give the Sox a 3-1 lead. But it was Vasquez, who's been having a pretty darn good season for himself overall, had a 3-run blast in the eighth to help really seal that win. So that was pretty much the recap of game three, but a couple questions are, like, what can we really say about this pen? Who is to blame? Is it Chaim? Is it Cora? Is it truly no one? Is it everyone? It's just been so frustrating. It's been the biggest glaring hole, I think, all season.
Yeah. And that's a tough one. Cause I think it truly is, like, not to be that guy, but I think it is truly kind of a mix of all of them.
Yeah. True.
Chaim has done a really good job for the majority of this bullpen, with one glaring exception of just, like, finding that shutdown closer, which they may have now finally found, mm-hmm. or at least finally turned to with Houck. But it's like, hey, man, it's June 19th. We maybe should have had one by now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So that part is frustrating. And that was, like, one of the key things that we talked about throughout the offseason podcast was, like, we really wanted to find at least 2 high leverage arms. And we really didn't come out of the offseason with any. Mm-hmm. So that piece is frustrating. One, I feel like the criticism that we keep coming back to with Alex Cora as manager is bullpen usage.
Yes.
We continually get to the end of the year and guys are completely burned out. He does make some questionable calls in how he's turning to guys, but also part of that has just been the people that he's worked with. I thought coming into this year, this was, like, the deepest bullpen that he's had to work with, but he still kind of made some questionable calls, like we talked about earlier. Like, it took them a really long time to finally turn to Houck in this situation and get to the closer role.
Absolutely.
And then also, like, it is kind of no one's fault because they kind of have who they have, and, you know, Cora can only turn to the guys that he has, and it really kind of at any point during his tenure hasn't really had more than, like, 2 guys that he can turn to, and that's part of the reason why we continually get to the end of the year and guys are completely burned out. So it is kind of a mix of all of them, I think, but I think all of those have, like, clear solutions, and that's the frustrating part is, like, we could have solved this a long time ago and maybe bank those 8 to 10 wins earlier, and we'd be in a real good situation right now instead of, you know, went through that first month of hell before they finally started, you know, turning around and playing these games. But it makes me feel better about where they currently are and the, like, where they are at heading into this gauntlet of AL East games that they have over the next, whatever it is, month and a half, like, till through the end of July. Makes me feel like they're in a much better position to handle those games. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like there's going to be a lot of games like this where they'll have 3-4 run leads. And all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, it'll be a save situation. And they'll have to turn to Tanner Houck. And then all of a sudden, you've used Tanner Houck in back-to-back games. And now who are you going to turn to try and close out a game?
Yep.
I don't know, because you don't really have anyone else. Yeah. So that's going to be a fun one to navigate, because there's going to be a whole lot of close games.
Yes, there will be.
What's your take on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I agree completely. It's so difficult just to say, like, it's all Haim's fault. Yeah, Haim could have done better. He could have gotten you a Kendall Graveman, or he could have got you a Kenley Jansen. But at the same time, spending big money on bullpens sometimes can be proved to be a waste, because there is the volatility of, you know, not just the closer, but pretty much any relief pitcher. Like, the perfect example is all the money that the White Sox threw at Hendricks. Like, he might actually need Tommy John, because he's having issues with his elbow, and that could lead to something very problematic down the stretch. And you've thrown just so much money at a reliever, whereas you could just spend money elsewhere. And he's from Tampa Bay, who's kind of thrown again these crazy bullpens that just end up being really good. Like, he found a Schreiber out of, like, the scrap heap. And I think he just thinks that way so much because that's the way he's really always kind of gone about it. But now he might need to pivot just a little bit, maybe, and actually spend money on your bullpen too. Like, I think it can sort of go, there can be like a nice balance on spending, but also finding guys.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely feel the same way. But 2 out of 3, that ain't bad, especially against the first place Cardinals team. Who's your MVP of the series?
I put down Pivetta just because I was just really impressed with what he did today and not having his best stuff and still just going out there and doing 7. Like, couldn't really, I mean, I can't really ask for more, especially considering how difficult the season began for him and when he was figuring out mechanic things. And now just looking like such a steal. Like, the Red Sox got such a steal in getting Nick Pivetta, and just what he's done this season. He's looking like, I don't want to say an ace, because, like, it's so, to give that ace title to so many people, it's like, they're just throwing it out. I remember when people used to be like, oh, Eduardo Rodriguez, Eddie Aces. I'm like, no. But, like, Pivetta's looking to be, like, a solid number 2. And that's, like, pretty damn impressive, if you ask me.
Yeah, for sure. I went with Houck, the guy who had to bail him out twice to get the wins. Which I think is the first time on this entire podcast in its 3-year run that I've given it to a member of the bullpen. Congratulations, Tanner Houck.
I mean, that is also someone, because he literally saved 2. Absolutely. For sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up the Cardinals series. We'll take a quick break, come back and preview the series against Detroit. You're up to the minute. Standings, the American League East. The New York Yankees are in first place at 49-17, 11 games back. In second place is the Blue Jays. 13 games back is the Rays. 13.5 games back, a mere half game back of the Rays, is your Boston Red Sox. And then 20 games back is the Orioles. Heading to Detroit?
Yes, I think we're going to Detroit, right? Let me just double check that.
No, welcoming Detroit to Boston. Okay.
Welcoming.
The 26-40 fourth place in the American League Central, Detroit Tigers. This team has had quite a down year. Offense ranks 30th pretty much across the board, which is not where I think a lot of people thought this offense would be. But hey, that's what you got. Pitching matchups here, we got Josh Winkowski versus Alex Fado, Rich Hill versus Bo Brisky, and Michael Wacha versus Tarik Skubal. What do you think of those matchups?
Yeah, I mean, I'm predicting 3-0 sweep, just because, sorry Tigers fans, this team is bad. I was hoping they wouldn't be this bad. Honestly, I was thinking that they were actually going to turn a corner. I didn't think they were necessarily going to really compete for this season, but I thought maybe in the future they could really, and they've just been hit with a lot of things. Like, there's been some weird stuff with Eduardo Rodriguez where he's taking a leave and isn't, nobody really knows when he's returning back to the Tigers. You know, you have Javier Baez, who has just been completely underperforming that entire contract that he was given. Then they had, you know, who they thought was going to potentially go into, you know, a potential ace role for them in the future with, oh my God, why am I blanking on his name?
Casey Mize?
Yes, Casey Mize. Thank you. They thought that Casey Mize was, you know, they thought that he was going to maybe be like a really good person in their pen for them. He just went down with Tommy John. So there's just a lot of bad things have been going bad for the Tigers that, you know, I know Skubal, that's a name I'm familiar with. I think he is potentially has really good, you know, there's really good potential in there. But like, I'm really not familiar with any of these other names other than Bo Brisky being a really cool name. Like, yeah. Other than that, really not too familiar. So we are throwing Winkowski, Hill, and Waka. Like, Waka's going to be really good. But then, you know, Hill, we don't really know what we're going to potentially get from Hill. And Winkowski can be like a little hit or miss. But I still think I believe in the Red Sox offense. I believe being at Fenway Park. I think that we're going to get these. Yeah.
Yeah, not much of a lineup to throw out there. Victor Reyes leading off, Harold Castro heading second, Miguel Cabrera third, Robbie Grossman fourth, Javier Baez fifth, Riley Green, who was just called up, hitting sixth, Spencer Torkelson seventh, Jonathan Scope eighth, Tucker Barnhart ninth. Looking at their stats, Jaimer Candelario leads them in home runs with five. That's not a lot. He's also hitting 181. They don't have a single member of their lineup outside. Oh, sorry. Though they do have, they have two. Miguel Cabrera, no shock, and Robbie Grossman are the only two players in their roster with OBPs over 300. There's not a whole lot here that I'm worried about.
No, I agree. It's been just super underperforming. Like I said, I wasn't expecting them to win and compete in, you know, 2022, but I thought that, you know, come next season that they could be really placed well. And I feel bad for their fans because their fan base is looked at, you know, they went out and they got, you know, a number three in Eduardo Rodriguez. They thought that they were getting, you know, El Magro, like, you know, this great shortstop, and he's just been a disappointment. So it's like, I feel bad for the fan base because it did look like the Tigers were trying to improve their team, but now they're still just, they're having a terrible season.
Yeah, I thought they would be close to like 75, 80 wins. They took a huge step forward last year.
Mm-hmm.
And just, they have so much really talented youth like Green and Torkelson, and you mentioned Mize and Skubal. And I really like what Fado's done this year. I mean, he got blown up in his last start, gave up like seven runs, but prior to that, he had a sub three ERA. That was a guy that I liked when he came out of college, when he was drafted. And I thought he could kind of be a guy. He hasn't really had the strikeouts that I thought of, but he's kind of hitting his stride now. But they have just like a ton of young talent. And then you add in the signing of Baez, and they brought Scope back, who had a really good season last year. I didn't think they would compete, but I thought they would be a team that like really gave a lot of people trouble throughout the year and finished like just under 500. And like you said, were really poised for like a breakout 2022.
Yeah.
And then they just took a massive step back.
Yeah,
from all the progress they made last year, and it's really kind of confusing.
It is. It really is. Just considering, like, and they showed their fan base, like, we're trying to get better, and they've just gotten worse, and it's super unfortunate for them and for their fan base.
All right, I completely forgot about Austin Meadows too. They made the trade for Austin Meadows, so yeah, they definitely tried to get better.
No, it just undoubtedly
did not work. So yeah, but I'm with you there. I went with a 3-0 sweep for the Red Sox. Who is your pick for MVP?
I'm really hoping that Verdugo, he's shown flashes of coming out of a little bit of a slump, but then he'll regress a bit. So it's just been, I don't know, Verdugo's career seemingly is like up and down, up and down. So I'm really hoping that he can maybe start to settle in and have a great, I'm really hoping for a great series from him that can really start to be a better second half for him, because he came out really hot. And then it was just a little, you know, so it's like, I don't know, Verdugo frustrates me because I think he, and I know he is so much better than what he has shown. So I'm really hoping that we can get a good series that'll really start to propel him into, you know, a second half that can be really good.
Yeah, so I went with a similar pick. I went with Story. I wanted to pick Story as my MVP for last series as the prediction, as like a trying to manifest it kind of thing. And then he hit the home run today. He had a couple hits in this series, and it kind of feels like maybe he's turning into one of those hot streaks again.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm like, all right, you show me a little bit. Now I'm gonna push for the manifestation.
Love it.
And go with Trevor Story having another maybe like 8 home run series.
Would love it.
See how he comes out of this.
Yeah, so. I think like the interesting thing about Trevor Story is you get like, you'll see Red Sox, you'll see like Yankee fans on Twitter that'll be like, ha ha, like the Red Sox wasted all this money. Just admit that you're still jealous you don't have Trevor Story. It's fine. I don't care if, you know, you're on this hot streak right now, but you're still jealous that we have him and you don't. But they'll do all these things that'll like be like, Glaber's better. Look at this. Look at that. I think when everything evens out by the end of the year, you're going to look at a Trevor Story and you're going to look and say that the money that we paid him was of the value. Truthfully.
I mean, he's at 10 homers, nearly 10 steals already.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Just because the average isn't there doesn't mean he's not. I mean, he's like going to win Gold Glove at second base, too. So it's like, come on. Way more than average. Shaking my head. Well, that was going to do it for us. Recapping Cardinals, previewing the Tigers.
Yep.
Thank you for listening. We have a bunch of great pods that we're pushing out here at Over the Monster Network. With the transition of Matt, I think we're going to like redo our schedule a little bit because Matt and Brian had a podcast, which obviously they don't do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to keep this one coming. Jake and I are going to keep ours coming, I believe. Bob is going to keep the prospect pod coming. So Keep your earbuds tuned in because we're going to have a bunch of stuff here rolling out in the feed all season and in the off season, just all the time. We like to do podcasts. So there you go. You can find us at Over the Monster. You can find me on Twitter at Spoken Keats. Bailey, you can find at Frawline89. Anything else you want to roll out?
No, just follow me over there. I'd be tweeting about baseball, occasionally tweet about movies, occasionally just some anger. You know, it happens.
Perfect. There we go. Thanks for listening. We will be back with you later in the week to preview the series against the Guardians.